91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. The terms Distinguished Fellow of English and Mixed Martial Arts Cage Fight seem impossibly paired. Surely there aren't beaten and bloodied blokes in academia. Hello, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. We'll visit with Jonathan Gottschall, author of The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch. While many fans think boxing passé with waning appeal, the full contact sport of mixed martial arts has surged in popularity over the past two decades. Adjunct English professor Jonathan Gottschall trained for 2 years before climbing into an arena cage, and he faced a real opponent. His story up next in a Topical Currents rebroadcast after NPR and regional news.
And it is today's Topical Currents, Wednesday edition. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. For many observers, mixed martial fighting is a vulgarity. It's been termed human cockfighting. And with us now is Jonathan Gottschall.
While an adjunct English professor and close to age 40, he trained hard for 2 years to fight a legitimate mixed martial arts bout. He's chronicled his pursuit in the book, The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch.
John Gottschall joins us now from Western Pennsylvania and via Skype.
Welcome, Jonathan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Did you watch the big fight?
Sure did.
What'd you think?
Oh, it was a snoozer.
I think blood. Not enough
like most
blood.
People, I sort of kicked myself afterwards for suckering for it.
Well, Jonathan, maybe I've been living under a rock, and that could be, but I was not familiar with this sport of mixed martial arts, MMA, as we'll refer to it. What is it, and who invented it?
Okay, great question. I think it's a great way to start with the history of it. So it started about 20 years ago, and it started as a way to settle these old barroom arguments between martial artists. So they all thought they were the best. The boxers thought they were the best. The wrestlers did. The karate guys did. The judo guys, and so on and so forth. And the UFC was about the ultimate fighting championship. This was the big organization for mixed martial arts. It was about putting up or shutting up. So it took talented representatives from each of those styles. It literally locked them into a chain link cage and had them square off in these no holds barred fights. And the results of these fights were pretty fascinating because the styles that everyone assumed were best, stuff like the Asian striking styles, basically, like karate and kung fu and taekwondo and so on, those guys didn't just lose. On the whole, they got massacred and humiliated. And so mixed martial arts evolved out of that shock. And it's about taking things that work from each martial style. So it's basically a hybrid sport that combines kickboxing, American-style wrestling, and a technique called Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is about rolling around on the ground with somebody and applying chokes and joint locks in order to get them to say uncle.
Now, this MMA goal of yours was more than just participatory journalism, but what started your motor on this?
Well, it's funny. I'm as shocked as anybody else that I wrote this book. A few years ago, I was just in my English department office. I was working as an adjunct instructor at a small liberal arts school. And I was sort of pushing up on middle age and maybe I was having like a miniature midlife crisis or something. And one day I look out the front window of the English department during office hours, and this new business had moved in across the street. And it was one of these cage fighting gyms. And I could see the guys, and they were in the cage, through the big, showcase window. I could see the guys in the cage. They were dancing, hitting, tackling, rolling. And I experienced this very surprising emotion. And the emotion was envy. I envied them. They seemed so alive in their cage, while I felt like I was kind of rotting away in my cubicle. So I had this funny thought, and the thought was, it was a joke at my own expense. And it was like, hey, wouldn't it be funny if I went across the street and joined them? And I thought it was funny because, I'm an English professor. I have this incredibly civilized job. I'd never been in a fight in my entire life. And then my next thought was, hey, you know, maybe there could be a book in that, a sort of nonfiction version of Fight Club, where I'd walk across the street, I'd try to learn how to fight, but along the way, I'd also be asking these big, deep questions about the role that violence has played in human life.
It's much more about mixed martial arts, though, John. It's also the evolutionary reasons of why humans fight.
And exactly.
Spends a lot of time on that.
Exactly. Yeah. For me, it wouldn't have been very interesting just to make it a book about this particular sport. I was always interested in getting into the cage myself as a way to gain experience. Yeah, but also as a way to bridge into these big questions about violence. And I guess the book. Should I launch into that now?
Sure.
Before you launch into why. I have more questions before we go there. Okay. So, because you're. You say that you spoke of experiences in your youth when you backed down from fights. And True. So you wondered if you were afraid, if you were a coward. So were you trying to prove to yourself that you weren't when you went into this, when you decided to participate?
Partly. You know, when people ask you why you write a book, it's always kind of an artificial question that you give an artificial answer to. There's a multitude of different things that are driving you into it. And one of the things that drove me into it wasn't the hope of proving that I wasn't a coward. I actually wanted to do the experiment to see if I was a coward. So I had, you know, I'd always kind of admired people who are brave, who do courageous things, you know, war reporters and things like this, you know, people who take these risks. And watching those guys across the street, it kind of occurred to me that I'd never done a brave thing. And I remembered that I'd never been in a fight. And it wasn't because of high-minded, pacifistic reasons, you know. I was just, you know, as a kid, I was just scared. And so, there was a bit of a redemption thing for me. Could I stand up to these guys who were going to be bigger and stronger and younger and more skilled than me and not compete well? You know, I never really thought I could become like a really good fighter or anything, but at least compete bravely.
But you did have some training in martial arts, right?
I did, but you know, 20 years ago, roughly, in my early 20s, I had did a couple years in karate. But here's the big lesson of the UFC, of mixed martial arts, is that karate training of the type that I was doing is not actually fight training. It doesn't do you actually very much good at all.
You say if you watch it from outside the cage as a spectator, it can look brutal and gruesome. And you said you couldn't imagine why people would hit each other that hard and that ferociously unless they were horrible sociopaths or bullies or sadists. And you expected to find this gym full of bullies and aggressive guys. So why did you engage in that? And then we'll ask you what you found, but
because I had an honest question, and the question, you know, I wanted to ask honest questions about violence, and this seemed to be, I mean, to me, maybe the biggest and most important question and the oldest question is, why do men fight? Why are men so aggressive? Why do men keep screwing things up? Why do men fight their wars? And why do men get in their fistfights and disrupt social life within the community? And so I went into this environment in order to prove a thesis. The thesis I went in with was that mixed martial arts is this perfect metaphor for human brutality, the sort of man being a wolf to man, you know, this just, and I expected to use MMA as this metaphor for this darkness and ugliness at the core of human nature. And then I got in there and I just didn't find it. You know, it's a friendly environment. It's a comradely environment. The men are trying to wound each other, but it's always in a spirit of respect and admiration. And it's just not the angry violence that I expected going in. So I had all these stereotypes about cage fighting that I think everybody else has going in. But the process of living inside this warrior culture for about 3 years and training and sparring myself basically upset all of my preconceptions.
What was it like for you to, as an adjunct professor of English, to get used to and expecting to be repeatedly punched in the face at the age of 40?
Well, you know, it's funny.
We don't heal so quickly.
No, we don't. Oh, my gosh, we don't. So It's frightening. You know, going to the gym is frightening. I went in and sparred today, and it was frightening. I have this little anxiety every time I do it. But there's something about it. You know, very few people come into the gym tough. You know, they might even come in skilled. They might come in athletic, but they don't come in tough. And the way you get tough is by going into the gym every day and battling with your fear. And so I found that I was just, you know, like most people, I went in pretty scared and pretty spazzy. But after a while, you sort of get used to it. You know, once you're in there, the fear kind of evaporates, about midway through the sparring. And you just kind of get used to getting hit in the face, and it just becomes, you know, part of your life.
You know, Jonathan, you say you talk about the camaraderie and it's, you know, a kind of warm kind of violence.
Yeah.
But why is it banned in New York State? And why last year, and I researched this, James Lee Offerman, the chairman of the Association of Boxing Commissions, announced that under the urging of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the U.S. government is expected to pass a bill in 2015, which will make all mixed martial arts competition illegal in all 50 states.
New York, it is illegal. I haven't heard the second thing, and I'm skeptical.
Okay.
I'm highly skeptical that mixed martial arts is going to be banned in all 50 states. I haven't heard that, and I think I would have heard that if that was going to happen. There's no question that mixed martial arts is a dangerous, brutal sport, and I sympathize with people who look at it and say this is just sheer barbarism. This should be abolished. To be honest, oftentimes watching a particularly gruesome fight, I will feel the same way. I'll feel the same way. Like, you know, this is just beyond the pale. But basically, you know, these guys, you know, I don't think we should abolish it. I think we shouldn't abolish it. And it's not because I need it as a fan. I think the guys need it. I think the fighters need it. You know, 99-point-something% of these guys are not professionals. They are amateurs. They do it without any hope of fame or fortune. There is no fame or fortune. They do it because they want it and because they need it and because it brings a certain bigness and challenge to their life. It gives them a kind of quest that they can be on, you know. And if you took this away from them, they just find some other dumb thing to do. You know, they'd take up free climbing, or they'd be motocross riders. They'd try to swim the Atlantic Ocean or some other crazy dangerous stunt.
In the book, I was surprised to learn about the fans of mixed martial compared to, say, team sports. And you can, at first glance, you'd think the mixed martial audience would be a bunch of knuckle dragon rednecks or something.
Sure.
But actually, the team sports are more avid. And if you look at international soccer or NFL games, and like in your neck of the woods, the Browns and the Steelers, the fans mm-hmm. are much more rabid and more likely to be
not
fighting.
Not to mention hockey games.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Has anybody ever died? Have there been any deaths from mixed martial arts on the professional level or otherwise that you know of?
Yeah, there have been deaths, sure. Not in the sport's main promotions, so the big promotions, the UFC, Bellator, things like this, but there have been a handful of deaths over the last decade. But not, you know, nothing on the scale of, for instance, boxing. Nothing on the scale of cheerleading. Nothing on the scale of bull riding.
Stock cars.
Yeah, there's many sports where the death or free climbing. You know, free climbing is very peaceful, very wonderful sport. You're not hurt at all until you're dead. You know, until you just fall to your death from a cliff. So I don't want to minimize the danger of the sport. I mean, the sport is absolutely dangerous. You know, I've described it in my book and elsewhere as a brain damage contest. At bottom. There's other ways to win an MMA contest. You know, you can choke a guy. You can, you know, get a joint lock that gets them to say uncle. It can be a pretty gentle victory. But at bottom, the main way to win is to hurt the other guy's brain worse than he hurts yours. Mm. And so there is a certain brutality to that, you know, should not be downplayed.
We're speaking with Jonathan Gottschall, an author and American literary scholar specializing in literature and evolution. And he's written The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch. A short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Jonathan Gottschall, an author and American literary scholar, and he teaches at Washington and Jefferson College in Pennsylvania. He's written The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight, and Why We Like to Watch. And we're going to get to why men fight, but
Bonnie, he's really getting me kind of pumped up. I'm doing this.
Oh, maybe you're going to be doing this.
It's just
this.
A good thing he's up in Pennsylvania. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, we can have one more problem with
doing this book. Men keep challenging me to fight now that we're...
Really? I wouldn't be surprised. John, we sort of touched on the MMA versus traditional martial disciplines. And as you found out and relayed in the book, the more street-like MMA is much more effective than any of the fancy stuff.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, the cool thing about mixed martial arts, one of the things that attracted me to it as a scholar and a person with sort of scientific frame of mind is that, you know, the traditional martial arts were basically sort of religious in character. There was a certain faith that you had to have. There were certain beliefs that weren't questioned. There was an ethic of obedience to the tradition and to the sensei or the master, whoever it was. Whereas mixed martial arts is about questioning everything. There is no dogma. There is only what works. And so the mixed martial arts gym is sort of, you know, I compare it to a science lab that's devoted to the constant testing and refinement of martial hypotheses. And if the hypothesis proves out inside the gym, then you keep it. If not, it's brutally cut out of the system.
Jonathan, getting to your subtitle, Why Men Fight, we just talked about the fight between Mayweather and Pacquiao, and, you know, Joe said it was like high tea, you said it was boring. So yeah. What was it? Was there not enough violence? Why do we want to see all that blood? Is that what was wrong with it?
It was more defensive.
Well, yeah, what's wrong with that?
Well, I think, you know, if we wanted... Again, I have my stereotypes coming into this project, and they're probably the same stereotypes that most English professors would have, that people who go to watch these fights must be savage barbarians, and they must just want to watch a lot of blood being poured out on the mat. And I eventually completely rejected that idea. There probably is some barbarism or bloodlust involved in it, but I don't think it's the main thing. And here's why. I don't want to watch ISIS torture/murder videos, and I doubt you guys do, and I doubt most of your listeners do. Mm-hmm. If we just wanted blood and pain, that's what we'd watch. We wouldn't pay $100 to watch the tame violence of a boxing match. So I think what we're reacting to in the Mayweather-Pacquiao debacle isn't a lack of blood, but a lack of drama. I think what really draws us to these fights is drama. You have these two guys, one sort of the good guy, one sort of the bad guy, and they're clashing in this incredibly decisive moment. It's a form of drama, a boxing match, a big cage fight, that few other forms of drama can compete with. And this was a drama where all the air just got left out. I mean, got pulled out of the balloon.
You mean that fight?
Yeah, because there was no desperation. There was no opportunity for the men to display their courage and their heroism and their perseverance and their fortitude. There are all kinds of wonderful human virtues that are usually on display in a big fight. It's not just the dark angels of human nature. It's the best angels of human nature as well.
Say compared to the old Ali Frazier battles that just went down to where they both could neither hardly stand up and were still fighting.
Yeah, it was just like watching the end of an epic poem, you know, where Hector and Achilles are squaring off. It was that dramatic. And that's what people expected of Mayweather Pacquiao. But most people feel like those guys kind of showed up to get their paycheck, had a nice sparring match, and went home with all of our money.
We're going to take some calls in just a moment. But, John, I wanted to touch on something you talk a lot about in the book, which is the monkey dance.
Yeah, the monkey dance. Yeah, so the book is about basically the monkey dance. That's the main thing that runs through the whole book. It's a big idea. And if you've ever seen a nature video of like two elephant seals clashing in the surf or a couple of goats upon a hillside cracking skulls, biologists call that ritual combat. It's a way that different animal species have developed to figure out who's bigger and stronger and tougher and fitter without the danger of fighting it out to the death. And humans are animals. We're complicated animals. We're cultured animals, but we're animals still. And the monkey dance is my name for human versions of those kinds of ritual contests. Everything from deadly duels to verbal duels, and especially sports. And the key thing to remember about these sorts of contests is they may seem silly. It may seem like a lot of macho blustering and posturing, and they are kind of silly. That's why I call it the monkey dance. But they, on the whole, we should be grateful for them. On the whole, they do a good job of channeling aggressive energy down reasonably safe pathways.
Why is it that men fight? Why is it predominantly among men? I mean, I realize there are some women that fight. Do women do MMA as well?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. But you are right. I mean, with human sex differences, there's always tremendous overlap. You know, so if I say that men are taller than women, you'll name 16 women who are taller than me. So we're talking about averages here.
Right.
But one of the very, very strongest sex differences, and in fact, I'd argue it's probably the strongest sex difference, the most massive sex difference, is in likelihood of resorting to physical forms of violence. Men simply dwarf women in this respect. And it's not a cultural thing. This is absolutely cross-cultural. It's cross-historical. In fact, there has never been a documented example in the history of the world where women were more likely to wage the wars, where women were getting into fights on the home front. So this is the probably the largest sex difference between the sexes, and it's also probably the least controversial one. Least controversial in the sense that almost everyone agrees that this has biological roots.
Evolutionary and biological.
Yeah. It doesn't mean that culture plays no role. It doesn't mean that culture is powerless to affect this. It doesn't mean it's biologically determined and that we're robots and we're just playing out this genetic script. But there are biological components to this.
John, before we take our break, I wonder if you've heard of this in Miami. We have all kinds of things going here. We're famous for that. But there's a lot of bare-knuckled backyard fights.
Oh, yeah.
That are promoted on the net. Often they're busted. There's a guy here named Kimbo Slice who's popular on the internet. So you're aware of that.
Yeah. To be honest, I just wrote a piece that I hope will be published fairly soon, calling for the return of bare knuckle fighting. People have the wrong idea about the gloves. They think that the gloves make the sport safer, and they do make it safer for the hands. But the cost of making it safer for the hands is making it a lot more dangerous for the head and the brain. And here's why. If you wrap a hand up, a fragile human hand with these little bones, you wrap it up in foam, and then you cast it, you make it kind of invulnerable to damage, these guys can throw those fists around like brutal clubs. If bare-fisted boxers tried to throw their hands like glove boxers do, they would reduce their hands to rubble. They'd cripple themselves. So the damage done by a gloved fist is actually, counterintuitively, a lot greater than the damage that can be done with a bare fist.
I'm trying to think if there is something similar in football with a helmet.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes, yeah. I'd argue exactly the same thing.
You would?
Yeah. Both the helmet and the glove were both well-intended humanitarian gestures that backfired incredibly. They were attempts to make the sports safer that ended up making them exponentially more dangerous, especially for our most important organ, the brain.
We're speaking with Jonathan Gottschall. We have lots of calls, but we need to just take a break, so stay there and be patient, and we'll get to you. He's written The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch. We'll be right back. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Jonathan Gottschall, an author, an American literary scholar, and he's written The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch. It is such a strange pairing when you say, or when I say, an American literary scholar and a mixed martial arts fighter. Perfect. Okay, so welcome back, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Okay, and we'll go to some calls. First up, this is Kay Van in Miami. He's waited a long time. Thanks for your patience.
Hi, how are you? My name is Kayvon Antonio, and I think it's great that you wrote this, Jonathan, and I look forward to reading it. But I wanted to make some clarifications because there's a lot of, I think, ignorance on the subject, and I think you touched on some stuff that needs to be explained a little bit better. I, just like you, I saw mixed martial arts. First, when it was, before it was UFC, there was Pride, I think.
Mm-hmm. And well, not before, and, but...
I'm sorry?
Not before.
Okay. Okay, well, but I saw Pride, and I got sort of the adrenaline rush, and I've been doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for about 10 years, and there's a lot there that to absorb, and really, it's there's a lot of ignorance, and the martial arts world is not about banging or who's tougher. It's really about respect, and it's about chess with an element of gladiator preparation thrown in, and building self-confidence, and also, self-defense. And it works for men and women. It's just that what you see on television looks brutal because they're making it more of a spectator event. You mentioned the stuff about the gloves, and you're right. In a normal mixed martial arts event, somebody gets hit, they go down, and fight's over, or they get choked out or something. Fight's over. They don't get them up. They take more hits to the brain and more hits to the head.
Jonathan?
The other thing is this. The Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is, look at it as open code, and it was the killer application of martial arts, as Jonathan described. It was a it's a discipline that was developed, started in India, went to China, ended up in Japan, and then made a jump to Brazil. And look at it as open code, where people are always tinkering it with it. And it's the Gracie family that brought this up, and this started. This
is Kayvon, we have a lot of callers. Is there a quick point you want to make?
Let's get the record straight. It started in Brazil, and then it came to the United States. And there's a lot of Gracie academies, including the son of the founder of the art, who teaches right here in Coral Gables, Brilliant Gracie. And yeah. It looks brutal, but it's not about having fear. It's about facing fears and conquering them, and that's why I give kudos to the author.
All right. Okay, thank you. Okay, Jonathan, any comment?
Oh, no, nothing. Actually, I completely agree with the caller. Everything he said is true, and I endorse it.
Can I ask you, did confronting your fears help you through them? Did it vanquish them?
No. That was one of the misnomers I had going in. You know, there's this idea that maybe you could go in there and you could learn not to be afraid. You could defeat it. Mm-hmm. And you don't learn to defeat it. You just learn to manage it. You learn to tamp it down well enough to function. And a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gym is a different thing. It's a gentle place. It's a very different environment than a mixed martial arts gym.
Jonathan, what have the reactions have you received from your academic friends? You said you kind of started this to because maybe they would fire you if you kept coming in with bruises.
Yeah.
But how did they react?
That was part it cracked me up a little bit that Bonnie was smiling about the fact that I was an English teacher who did this, because that's exactly the joke that made me do it. You know, the joke was that I would take this up, and wouldn't that be weird? Wouldn't that be funny? And it was sort of this semi-career suicide fantasy I was having, because it wouldn't be only me over there across the street from the English department. It's that my colleagues would be able to look out the window and see me warring in the cage. So I had this image of them looking up from their, you know, their poetry volumes, and there I'd be over in the carnage of the cage fighting gym.
Well, I guess I guess your department chair doesn't give you much trouble.
No. Well, no. I mean, it's they all know me. I mean, they all know me. They know I'm a nice guy. They know I'm a civilized human being, and you know, I'm nothing to worry about. I do worry a little bit more about the reception in the larger world of sort of pointy-headed academics, and if this, you know, will be caricatured as a book that's a glorification of macho barbarism. And I do fear that will happen to some extent.
Has that happened?
Possibly. You know, there's been a few reviews out that sort of take that tone. There's an article in the Chronicle of Higher Education, for instance, that is largely a fair article, but does sort of take some poetic license with my own personal brutality. You know, it sort of makes me out to be a lot more macho than I actually feel that I am.
That's interesting. Did you get any permanent damage from this, brain or otherwise?
Well, brain damage is sort of a time bomb, you know, in general. You know, right. So normally it's a time bomb that goes off sometime in the future. Okay. So I don't know about that. You know I got punched in the head, you know, hundreds, probably thousands of times. So possibly. So there was a lot of, you know, I described the sport as one-on-one tackle football. So all the brutality of tackle football with the addition of punching, kicking, kneeing, elbowing, and strangling. You know, so it's really, really quite dangerous. And
I think you left out gouging.
Well, gouging isn't allowed. Gouging is not allowed.
Oh, that's good.
But all that other stuff is allowed. And so, I've definitely left the gym more rickety than when I went in.
Next up, it's Max in Miami. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to much more briefly reiterate and support some of the things that the previous caller said. And also to add that my personal view is that we enjoy fighting because it allows us to work through aggression and frustration, and that there's a very basal instinct to abandon diplomacy and civility in certain situations and make the point with your fist, not to confine all combat sports to simply people just trying to beat their will into somebody else. I think we enjoy watching much more because of the skill and the dedication and the sacrifice of the fighters. Much in the same way, Aronofsky in Black Swan explores the sacrifice and body transformation that these top-tier ballerinas have to make, and also in The Wrestler, I suppose. There's a lot of restrictive dieting and dedication and training and you know, real physical pain that goes into developing fighting as a skill, and we appreciate that. And not only do we want to see two people, you know, duke it out, we want to see whose skill is superior. And I think that can, in general, be extended to a lot of different sporting formats. I'd also just like to note that I don't think this is unique to men, although it's perhaps more associated with them. There's plenty of female MMA fighters out there making a name for themselves.
Right, we mentioned that. Jonathan, any comment?
Yeah, well, no, again, I just want to... I couldn't have said it better than myself. I agree with everything he said. Let me focus on why I chose to focus on men. It's not a denial that women fight. Women fight at much lower levels than men in the outside world, and they're underrepresented pretty vastly in the world of combat sport. But we have this woman, Ronda Rousey, who's this magnificent fighter and an incredibly charismatic young woman who sort of electrified the world of mixed martial arts. The reason I focused on men was because you got to remember what my project was about. I wanted to know. It was mainly about violence in the world. I wanted to understand violence in the world, and the way I was going to understand it was through the fighting cage. And so I focused on men because men are responsible for most of the destructive violence that goes on in the world. It wasn't an attempt to deny that women fight. And I also think that women fight for different reasons. I think they go into the martial arts gym for different reasons than men do. But we don't need to go into that right now.
John, in that gym that you trained at across the street, were there steroids going on?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, that's a problem. Again, part of the problem is that people's idea of what a martial artist is like or what a mixed martial artist is like has been defined by the guys they see on TV, these giant, strapping, you know, honed martial arts demigods. The guys in the amateur ranks aren't like that. I didn't see any evidence of performance-enhancing drugs, although it's a real scourge in the professional ranks.
Does any money change hands at the level you were competing at?
Very little. So the amateurs who fight, mainly young working class guys from small towns, some from Pittsburgh, in my neck of the woods. These are guys who are fighting for nothing. They get zero. In fact, it costs them money to fight. They have to pay their gym dues. They have to pay for their licensing. They have to pay for their medical exams. And even at the professional level, they'll call these fights professional. But these guys aren't professional. Every one of these guys has a day job at the small-time professional level. It just means they make $500, you know, to show up, and maybe another $500 if they win.
You know, it's interesting because there's so much money in boxing. I mean, that fight we just witnessed is probably, right. They said, the highest grossing.
But not at the lower levels.
Well, but I'm thinking how this is a throwback to Roman gladiators, but they had something at stake. They had their freedom at stake, the ones that were forced to fight. And then there were others.
Or their life.
Or their life, right. And then there were others who fought because they chose to, because the money, the purse was so great, and the fame was so great.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, for the most part, there were some free Romans who got into the gladiatorial cage, either for the challenge of it or for the fame of it, whatever. But for the most part, these were slaves. These were guys who did not have a choice. And I think that's the main place where the Roman gladiatorial analogy breaks down pretty severely. The key thing about mixed martial arts, this is in contrast to boxing. Boxing has always been dominated, for the last century at least, by poor people, by people from the lower economic strata, usually with darker skins than the fans. Mm-hmm. And so it seemed like an exploitation narrative. It seemed like those guys, you know, just didn't have any other way out of the ghetto, and so they went into the ring and beat themselves to death for our delectation.
In a way, now, fighting for their freedom, in a way.
In a way, fighting for their freedom, exactly. But that narrative really falls apart pretty spectacularly for mixed martial arts. Since the beginning, this has been a sport that's been dominated by middle-class people. In fact, for the last, I don't know, at least 15 years, the sport has been mainly dominated by ex-college wrestlers, Americans, with, you know, college degrees and white-collar options outside of the cage.
And don't forget college professors.
Yeah. There's only one of us, as far as I know, but I might be the toughest English professor in Southwest Pennsylvania.
We're speaking to Jonathan Gottschall. He's written The Professor in the Cage. Last break. We'll be right back.
And we return. Topical Currents today, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and we're speaking with Jonathan Gottschall. He's the author of The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch. If you're interested, we'll have links to that book at our Facebook page, Topical Currents at Facebook, and also at the WLRN.org website. Bonnie?
All right. Well, I thought you want to take another call.
Okay, let's do that. Let's take line three. Joe in Pompano.
Hello.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just had a quick comment. The person said that he had left the gym feeling rickety. I do internal Chinese kung fu myself, and one of the goals that we try to achieve is bruising, but not bruising to injure. And we find that builds the body in such a way that you're able to continue training well into your late years and later in life. And I'll take my answer up here. Thank you.
Okay. Jonathan.
Well, I'll have to look that up because I could certainly use some medical attention or some sort of kung fu chi energy to heal me. That'd be great.
You know, you said that you felt much healthier after you did this, even though you realizing you could die in the process. So does that mean your emotional and psychological strength are more important to you than your life?
I think in some ways they are, yeah. I mean, I have this little analogy, you know, about going out and riding around in the car with my dog. And my dog loves to, he's a hound dog, he loves to stick his head out the window and, you know, yell at the squirrels and yell at the people as he drives by. And he really enjoys his life. And I've been told that I should not do that, that I should put a harness on him and buckle him in. And to me, that would just remove so much joy from his life. So there's a cost to this sort of pleasure that he gets from this. And that's basically what most of us who do these kind of sports are deciding too, that we're willing to pay the cost for the pleasure. I don't do this in ignorance of the risks. I know the risks. I'm very well educated about them. But I've decided that the risks are worth it, that I get big emotions out of it. I get quite a lot of satisfaction out of it. I get friendships out of it. And so it's just basically a cost-benefit analysis that I've done. That's where I've ended up.
Okay. One thing we haven't touched on yet, Jonathan, before we go, I want to, is the importance of the stare. If you look at your dog in the eye too long, he gets nervous. If you want to start trouble in a bar, just stare at someone.
Isn't that amazing?
And of course, these fighters even do it at the weigh-ins. What's with the stare?
Yeah, the stare thing. You'd be surprised how much emotional energy I burnt before my fight wondering about how I was going to handle the stare down contest. So before most fights, there's this little ritual that guys will go through of a stare down contest. Both guys will try to stare at each other and hold fierce eye contact. Because according to film lore, fight lore, the guy who looks away first has basically acknowledged his fear, acknowledged that he's the subordinate, and he's lost the fight without even getting hit. And what's kind of interesting about this is that this is a very primate sort of things to do. Mostly in primates, aggression and sort of dominance hierarchies are worked out with a lot of body language, including what I call dually eyes. They have these eye contact duels where they basically are able to work out their status hierarchies without having to, you know, kill each other.
So someone has to look away. I mean, you have to fight.
Yeah, yeah. But usually, you know, they'll hold. I mean, when guys are very serious about this, and not every fighter will get involved in this, some fighters will look resolutely down and never make eye contact. So they can't lose the eye contact duel if they've never been in it. But other fighters will hold that gaze until punches start flying.
Okay, next up we have Stefan in Pembroke Pines. Hi.
Yes, the time is short. I promised the person who picked up the phone I'd address the issues of domestic violence. What are the levels of domestic violence within this group of men who engage in this fighting? Is it the same as the general population? Is it higher or lower? And thank you.
Okay, let's see. Jonathan, any
I don't have any stats on that, but my strong suspicion is it's either the same or lower. Again, I have these stereotypes going in, too. I figured that guys who did this, I'd watch these cage fights, and I'd say, what sort of savage maniac would want to do that? You know, you must be a savage maniac. And then I got to the cage, and they're just ordinary young guys. And so I've been at my gym, for almost 4 years now. And the competition is fierce inside the gym. But out of the hundreds of guys that I've known there, I've never heard of one of them getting in a real fight outside of the cage. And in fact, I've never seen a real fight break out in the cage in the sense of an angry and uncontrolled exchange.
Do you think it might deter some aggression or violence on the outside?
I'm also sort of skeptical of that. Okay. You know, I think a lot of martial artists will claim that I get my aggression out in the gym and therefore I don't have any left to spend once I leave the gym. But I'm a little skeptical of that narrative too, because there is some social science on that.
I was somewhat of a boxing fan when I was younger, and it just kind of went away where I wasn't interested in it. And when I saw some of the mixed martial, what turned me off about it was that this business where you could get somebody down and maybe put your knees on their shoulders and just pummel them repeatedly in the face.
Yeah, yeah.
It just didn't seem like it was sport.
No, and that's why the sport got banned. It's why it was characterized as human cockfighting, because it looks unbelievably brutal and ugly. But I think the people, you know, who have done intelligent comparison of the sports of boxing and mixed martial arts, almost everyone has concluded that boxing is far more dangerous. In a boxing match, it truly is a pure brain damage contest. There's no other way to win. And so guys are just taking clubbing blows to the brain over and over again with these heavy gloves on. Whereas in mixed martial arts, this is not to downplay the violence of the sport. It's just compared to boxing, it's not as bad because there's other ways to win besides just brutalizing the guy's head.
Let's take another call. We're short on time. Tom in Pembroke Pines. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to also make a comment. I thought it wasn't any worse MMA than boxing. Also, I know a guy at work who was doing it for a few years, and he seemed to just genuinely enjoy the competition, which makes me believe that your issue about why men do this, I think it's just in our DNA. And most men, there's some component they want to compete and less women. You look at children on the playground, boys are falling, getting hurt more. They're more adventurous. Girls, a little bit more safety. I think safety is just like so far down our list most of the time that it's almost non-existent.
Yeah, you know, I agree with the spirit of what you're saying. I don't think, to repair a certain misconception, I don't think men actually like to fight. Most men will go to great lengths to avoid a fight. Fighting is dangerous. Fighting is scary, and most guys will try to find a face-saving way out and only fight as a last resort. The reason I like cage fighting, and especially the sparring inside the gym, is it's not fighting. It's play fighting. And the emotions that you have are very much those emotions that you have with your friends when you were a little boy out in the playground wrestling and playing tackle football. It's just good, clean fun is how it feels to me inside the gym. Those are the emotions that I get out of it.
So do you still, so you spar, you said you did that today, I believe.
Yes.
So do you still fight though? I mean, do
No, I only did one actual, you know, competitive cage fight. And then, you know, that was enough for me. I didn't want to, I didn't need that. I needed to do one just as the sort of test, the challenge of it. But I did continue to train at the gym and spar at the gym just because it brought something special to my life. You know, it's a way for a dull, sort of boring, professorial type like me to have a few hours a week where I live this sort of, I call it a headlong sort of life.
Then what was it like? What was it like for you when you heard your name announced and there were cheers and boos? And
you know, it's funny. I don't even remember it. It was funny. I couldn't hear anything. I mean that physically. I was so caught up in it, and the emotions of fight and flight were so strong during my fight that I couldn't see anything. I couldn't hear anything. All I could focus on was the guy in front of me. And so, for instance, when my corner man, my coach, Mark Schrader, was screaming his instructions to me, I had no idea. I had no idea what he was saying to me.
You literally couldn't hear him.
I literally did not hear it. And he's a loud guy.
Do you think it was so much adrenaline or something?
I think it's something like that. Yeah. I've heard I haven't been able to look up the research, but I've heard soldiers talk about similar things. This sort of this tunnel vision you get because the danger in front of you is so severe that you just block everything out and focus on this, you know, source of danger right in front of you.
Well, our listeners will have to read the book to find out whether you won or lost. How about that?
That's great.
There we go. And the name of the book is The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch. And we're speaking with Jonathan Gottschall. He, of course, is an author and he's an American literary scholar specializing in literature and evolution and teaches at Washington and Jefferson College in Pennsylvania. Do you have a website?
Yeah, jonathangottschall.com.
Oh, that's easy enough.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Guys, it was so much fun. Thank you.
And protect your head.
I will. Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being with us. Today's Jonathan Gottschall interview was recorded in May. For a copy, we have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org. More information, links, and photos at the Topical Currents Facebook page. That's facebook.com/topicalcurrents. Our producer is Richard Ives with technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. Tune in for tomorrow's program when we gather a panel of University of Miami public health experts who map out the challenges ahead in their medical realm. How will warming and climate change affect the health of millions? Bonnie Berman for Joseph Cooper. Stay tuned for Here and Now, up next from NPR News.